Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 10th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me this lovely Sunday morning is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Oh, not too much. You know, enjoying the weather, enjoying chatting about baseball, having a good week. So how about you?
Taking it easy, man. I'm still injured, still haven't been able to go back out there. Well, I'm actually, the pain is gone, but as we all know, no pain does not equal recovery.
Okay.
It just means that you're not in pain.
Let me write that down so I will remember.
Well, no, we all know that, right?
Oh, okay. We all know that. Okay, forget that. Okay, moving ahead.
So I'm just making sure. I'll probably try to work out tomorrow at the gym, do a light run, and see how it goes.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck with that.
Thank you very much. On today's show, we've got an interview with Micah Hoffpower of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and we're going to discuss the standings and answer a couple of great listener questions. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, remember, if you live in the United States, find out more information about watching live Giants games on One World Sports by visiting oneworldsports.com. So, Wednesday it was, I think. I went to Tokyo Dome, way out to Tokyo Dome. It's actually closer. If you think about it.
Wow. You're like Mr. Geography.
Well, yeah, because according to you, it's like Siberia, so.
No, that's Cebu Dome. that's to a lot of people. For me, I like going to Cebu Dome, actually. So.
Yeah. Well, I went out to Tokyo Dome, and I talked to Micah Hoffpower of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and he's a pinch hitter, occasional DH, veteran guy on the bench, very nice dude, pushed the young players, kind of a guy on the bench for the Fighters. And I'd like to see him get more playing time, but we know how it goes. And
because they've got this character named Michelle Abreu who's just eating up the league. So
yeah, he's doing quite well. So yeah, he's not getting a lot of playing time. He really doesn't have a lot of numbers in terms of discussing what he's been contributing, but he did have this great stretch earlier in the year where he had games with back-to-back grand slams, and he was set up for another one the next day at Cebu Dome, I believe it was, and he as he talks about in the interview, he popped up the pitch, and I thought it was a pitch that he could have handled, but he just missed it, which happens. But grand slams are not something that the individual who hits the ball really accomplishes. It's definitely a team effort.
So that wasn't Mr. Puig doing that. That was the team doing it for him.
He's the guy who hit the ball over the fence, but you can't hit the grand slam without the other guys out there.
Agreed. Okay. His contribution is there. Anyway, we're getting mooter by the second. So yeah. Let's move on.
All right. So, he doesn't have a lot of numbers, but he had a lot of knowledge, certainly about the team. And, he gave us a peep about what's going on inside the Fighters locker room. So let's take a listen.
All right, back on the show again for a second appearance is Micah Hoffpower. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing?
Great to see you, man. It's been a long time. Been a long, long time. Man, we haven't talked since you were yelling at me a year ago in Chiba.
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's right. Now, your team lost Darvish 1 year, and then you lost Keisuke Tanaka the next year, and there's been some other changes. What's going on with you guys? How are you doing?
We're doing all right. We're scuffling to get by a little bit. You know, we win a few games, we lose a few games, and we're just trying to get things going on the right foot. You know, losing Darvish last year, we thought would really make a big impact on us, and then we turn around the next year and step up and go all the way to the Nippon Series, and then we lost Kensuke this year, we lost Yoshio as well, and two big losses for us in our offensive side of things. But we've had some guys that have stepped up pretty good offensively, and we just got to get clicking on the same page. One day we'll pitch and we don't hit. One day we'll hit and we don't pitch, and then one day we won't do either. So we just we got to get together, and it's, you know, people still say it's early, but there comes a point in time where you really gotta get after it. So hopefully we can get that together pretty quick and get after it.
All right, you said a mouthful there, you know, not pitching and all that stuff and losing all these players and all the changes, but how do you guys feel as a team right now? I mean, you're not that far out of it, in my opinion.
Well, you know, in a 16 league, obviously we're not that far out of it, but, you know, we're six games back of playoff contention right now, and if we expect to get anywhere closer to playoff contention, we've really got to step it up and play. You know, the good thing about it is the team is led by a bunch of guys that are really laid back. There is no pressure, and the atmosphere is really still very good in the locker room. So, you know, I think if anybody can do it, if anybody can turn around, it's us, because we have that type of team atmosphere, and they do a good job of trying to keep people on their toes and just kind of relaxed.
Good, good. Now, you had a really special stretch in April, I believe it was. You had a couple – oh, no, it was in May.
Right.
And you had a couple games where you had grand slams on back-to-back nights, and I know your teammates set you up for that, and you couldn't do it without them, but you're
Absolutely.
The one who hit the ball in the fence, so can you break down those two?
Oh, man, it was a great experience. I mean, the first night that it happened, the team was – I think we were up 5-1 or something like that, or something. And anyway, you got an opportunity to come up in a situation like that, and I've struggled over the years in Japan in my runners in scoring position situation, and just really trying to work on staying short and staying simple. And I can't remember who the first was off of. Takahori, I believe, is who it was. And you know, he made a mistake. He tried to go in and left it out over the plate. And you know, I hit it well. And you know, it was a great feeling that night. And then the next day, I was standing there in the on deck circle, and it was first and second or second and third. And Poppy Abreu was up, and he worked the count, had a great at bat, 3-2 count, took a ball, ball four, and I thought, man, I've got this is pretty cool. 2 days in a row, bases low, you don't get that very often.
So you're actually thinking that?
Well, I mean, you know, you're not thinking about the hitting the grand slam or anything like that, but it's like, this is pretty cool. You know, second day in a row, same thing you did last night, same approach, short, you know, simple, and same thing. And you know, had a good at bat against Mima.
Mima, okay.
Had a good at bat against Mima, and same situation, you know, battled and got into a count where, you know, he didn't want to make a mistake and tried to go in again and left it out over the plate, and same thing happened. You know, but the crazy thing about it was the next day we were in Cebu, and I got another chance to do the same thing, and it was pretty cool. But I ended up popping out on that at bat. Just got there just a little
and
bit early.
You were so mad. Yeah, I remember the announcers were talking about it. I remember
it was really cool, because I mean, the things that have to come together for you to get that chance first time, and then the second time, and then the third time in 3 days, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was great. Well, congratulations on that. Now, Shohei Ohtani is like the biggest news. In fact, I got here today and found out that you can't even walk up to him and talk to him. They get cut off all interviews with him. So what's your take on him as a two-way player?
I think he's good. I mean, there's no doubt about him. He's a real deal. The kick and pitch. You know, I think right now at this stage in his career, he's a better position player than pitcher. Stuff-wise, he's obviously a better pitcher. But his ability on the field has shown so far that he's a pretty impressive little hitter, man. And does a good job on the base pass. Plays a pretty good right field for us. So he's doing a pretty good job out there. And his pitching-wise, he's 19 years old. He's still got a lot of refining to do and cleaning things up. And I think once he gets to, you know, 20, 22, 23 years old, he's going to be a really dominant pitcher in this league for sure. So, but he's a good kid altogether, really a nice kid.
I've talked to some people already who, like, you know, they want him to pick one. And
well,
I'm like, why?
You know what, man, I've seen that. I've seen the reports. I've seen people say things like that. But here's my take on it. If I were good enough to do both of them, why not? You know, and the fighters have obviously given him the go-ahead to do both. And we have guys that can step in and play right field in days that he can't. So, you know, I don't think it's hurting our team. I think eventually he's going to be one of your guys in your starting rotation. But, you know, will he pitch on 6 days of rest or will he pitch on 10 days of rest? I don't know. But I think it's silly for people to say that, you know, he should have to pick one. Hey, man, the kid's good. If he's that good, let him go do both of them.
I'm with you. Now, we've looked at the defensive numbers for the fighters, and they're not quite as good as they were in the past when you guys were winning. is there some confusion going on out there? Is everything all right? We're just worried.
You know what, man? I think a little bit of that has to do with some guys pressing a little bit. Also, I think it has to do with some of the guys. We have some new team members. We have some guys that aren't necessarily on the same page. You know, and these guys are working hard. They work really hard to get that stuff worked out. We lost our captain at second base, man. And between him and Mac at shortstop, you know, there was a great gel there. Those guys had played together for a long time. So, I mean, and they knew exactly what was going on. So, you know, those kind of things factor into it. I think that's definitely something that can be worked out, and I think it's something that will be worked out.
This guy.
Yeah, Gallus just walked up. He's nuts. I'm going to talk to him later. Now, Sho Nakata, I mean, is he for real, or is he mostly hype? I mean, we know that Tatsunami worked with him in the offseason to get him ready for the World Baseball Classic, right. And since then he's been a little bit better, but I mean, what's your take on him?
Well, I think if you look back over the 3 years that I, or this is my third year to play with Sho. My first year I played with Sho, he had a really interesting stance to begin the year. He struggled with it. He came out of that stance. Yeah. He came out of that stance and went into similar to what he's doing now, and he started having success. And they turned his season around that first year. Second year, he came back. He wanted to stay with that wide base. He did it again, struggled with it again. He got out of it a little quicker, and he ended up salvaging his season. And this year he came in, and I think he just decided, you know what, I'm going to bang that, and I'm going to stay with what I had success with. And if you'll watch Sho, this year he's been way more impressive to me. Is he's taken his base hits to that right center field, and the kid's got power to all fields. He's got some really nice skills, and you know, if he continues to do what he's done throughout this season, yes, he is definitely for real. He's a very, very high quality baseball player, and he's one of the best throwing outfielders, most accurate throwing outfielders I've ever played with. Just all around good player, and I just hope he keeps the drive and the intensity. You know, being as young as he is, gets to that superstar stage really quickly. Sometimes people lose that drive, and I hope he doesn't lose it, because he's got a chance to be really, really good.
All right, last question. I don't know if this is a touchy situation or not, but your skipper got a lot of credit last year for getting you guys into the Japan Series. Should he take some of the blame for where you guys are now?
Absolutely not, man. I mean, I think a manager's job is a job where you're going to get blamed either way. You're either going to get praised for us doing well, or you're going to get yelled at for us doing bad. I think that's something that it doesn't matter where you're at, what country you're playing in. I think that's the way it works. I think last year we had a great group of guys, and we just clicked, and we worked, and we rolled, and we played, and it was awesome. There was never a down moment for us last year. I don't know that had a lot to do with the manager. I mean, I think all you can do as a manager is try to put the best people you feel like for that day in the lineup. And, you know, we've got guys on our team that I feel like would step up and take some of the blame, me included. I mean, I haven't hit for anything this year. You know, we've got other guys that aren't hitting as well as they should be. We've got guys that aren't pitching as well as they should be. So, I mean, you know, you can't put the blame on the manager because he doesn't swing my bat. I feel like all of our players would say that same thing. And we also had a huge change. Our coaching staff is completely different.
Right.
And I think that that can contribute to some things as well. You had some guys who were really comfortable with our coaching staff in the past, and they understood each other. Same thing. It's the growing pains of getting used to each other. So do I think it's the manager's fault? Absolutely not. He does not swing our bats, make those pitches or anything for us.
Okay. Well, you keep swinging. Swing well, bud.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right.
All right. Thank you again for the chat, Micah. It's always a great pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, well, it is always. And I haven't seen you this year, so hopefully we will attend to that fairly shortly.
What's your problem, man? What have you been doing?
It's a case of, you know, we waved and Wolfie was walking by, so I had to talk to him. This was earlier in April.
Okay.
So, and I talked to Michelle Abreu, who was the new guy. So, you know, how it is. Johnny come lately, that, you know, they get all the attention.
Talking about me? No, you're not talking about
no.
me. No. You never call me Johnny. Good.
I never call you Johnny or any of those other things.
So what stood out for you? Any of those
well,
other things?
Now, the thing with Micah, and we talked about this to some degree last year, is that he's there, you know, because he can swing a bat, but he always seems to be sort of the odd man out. And I don't mean that in his character ways. He's a bubbly, upbeat guy. But the reason he's on the team is because A, he can swing the bat, and B, he's a positive influence.
Definitely.
You know, he's not, if this guy complained about his playing time, he wouldn't have been here last year.
True.
So, it's nice to have him on the team, and you never know when he's going to be needed. Now, right now I mentioned Florence. You know, this is a guy who's been, really on the wrong end of the playing time spectrum for the foreign players, pretty much since the first day he walked in the door. But, you know, they keep him around, you know, and people would ask why. You know, he doesn't have the big numbers. He doesn't have the counting numbers.
Right.
But, you know, in some respects, he's sort of the American Hideki Matsui.
Mm-hmm.
In that he's a guy you want to have on your team if he can do the job when you ask him to do it. Okay. Now, I was really interested to hear I really enjoyed your talk and your questions, especially since I laid into the Fighters defense last week.
Yeah.
So, and having watched the game in which, you know, they couldn't, the guys didn't know whether to cover bases or to catch the ball or what to do. It seems like there was a confusion in addition to, there was sort of a combination of confusion and panic, which is never a good thing. So, anyway, so hearing his answer about that, you know, was for me very, enlightening. You know, it is so hard to replace three core guys from your team. Of course, Matt Conico is back with the team, although he's not playing much.
Sort of. Yeah, he's still got a bad knee. In fact, I chatted with him as well.
Okay. Well, when he doesn't have a bad knee or a bad back or a bad shoulder, they'll probably freeze him because that will be the ultimate expression of Makoto Kaneko.
Oh my goodness.
Health, because it never gets better than that. He's like Mr. Aches and Pains. He's the Japanese Lou Kapling.
Oh, cryogenics, baby.
Yeah,
it's cool inside. Come join us.
Chill out, dude. Okay. Anyway. So they lost, they haven't had him around, and he's been their shortstop and captain for years and years and years. And then, Kensuke Tanaka wanted to be a free agent so he could explore, Fresno, California. And they traded away Yoshio Itoi. Now these are three key defenders. And, you know, you can argue quality, and you can argue athleticism, but, it's hard to replace key parts.
Right.
And I think this is what Mike is talking about. You know, the other thing which was very interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
and speaking of replacing key parts, they lost Mr. Nishikawa the other day, their second baseman.
Right, one of their second basemen.
Well, he's the guy who's gotten the job, and he's not, I'll be honest, I love his swing, I love his athleticism. I think he's one of these guys who's going to be like Yang Daikon. He's going to be a better outfielder. He doesn't look like he has whether it's his bad judgments or reflexes or confidence. He has the tools to play second base, but he's not doing it yet. So, but he's a really good hitter. This guy he's got a beautiful swing. I love to watch him swing. He reminds me of he's like a little baby-faced Michihiro Ogasawara with a little smaller bat.
Haha, mini guts.
he is pretty much mini guts. He doesn't have exactly as much of that guts look as he did 2 years ago when I first saw him taking BP, but he's got a nice swing. Okay, anyway, so we'll get off of that. So anyway, he had a strained exterior ligament in his left knee, and he also has a bone bruise. So bone bruises are bad news. He probably won't be working on his second base fielding for a couple of weeks. The coaching staff was another good, and I mean, sort of keeping on the same thing. The coaching staff was really good comment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people, you know, coaches in Japan, and it's, I guess, because of some of that's my fault. Coaches in Japan get a bad rep in Japan.
Because of you.
Some of it's because of me. I mean, I say what other people tell me, and my own observations are the coaches, you know, disseminate a lot of dubious data. You know, just sort of like filling airtime. Wow, that sounds like me. Anyway, you know, just telling people, the famous story is from Warren Cromartie slugging it out in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach coming up to him, I think it was Hirota, coming up to him every day before the game and saying, you know, we're playing on grass today. Watch out, you know, be careful of how the ball bounces. Or, you know, it's windy today. Be careful of the wind. So it was
You mentioned that on the show before, just telling them things that are obvious, things that they already know. That
lots of reputation, but in fact, of course, there's so many different kind of coaches. And as I was we've had a couple of players talk about how the coaches have helped them, and I know Jason Standridge told me about how much the former Tigers coach Kubo, pitching coach Kubo, helped him so much with his balance and you know, and staying closed in his delivery and and you know, and having little tools to keep him on track. We've also had Kevin Hodges talked about his fondness for going to the coaches and pumping them for information, not only the pitching coach, but the batting coaches. You know, if you were to face me, how would you approach me?
Right.
So there is a lot of information out there, and certainly the coaches were kind of a weird thing about the Fighters at the end of, you know, the first thing they did at the end of the season, the first thing the Fighters and Dragons did at the end of the season was fire the pitching coach.
Well, those guys couldn't wait to get out of there. I think Yoshi, obviously we saw some discourse in the Japan series in terms of the use of pitchers, and then with the Dragons, there were ongoing issues during the season.
Yeah, they reported that Takagi and Gondo almost came to blows during the climax series.
Right. So I mean, these guys within a minute or so after the final pitch of the season for both teams, they were out the door. They were doing the LeBron James yank the uniform off as a walk off the court kind of a thing in the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I mean, they wanted to get out of there right away. I agree that the coaching staff and the issues there with they brought in Johnny Kuroki,
sure,
and it's his first gig as a pitching coach, and this is really new for him. I was fortunate to be able to talk to him briefly on a story about Ohtani that I did that is actually in the newspaper today, and
look forward to reading that.
Koji Otsuka, who's now the outfield defense and base running coach, and as far as I know, I don't remember him being a coach before. There's some new blood there. There's some new dynamics that are going on. Plus, you know, the middle of their infield, you talked about Nishikawa, but you know, with Obiki, who really wasn't a great defensive player with the Buffaloes, I can see why there's a lot of confusion. He's playing with different guys all the time. They've even put Kaneko. They put him at second on occasion when he's been healthy enough to play.
Wow.
There's just
that's
a lot.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's what he said when I talked to him as well the other day, and he said. He said the same thing. He said, yeah, it's been a long time.
He was Rookie of the Year as a second baseman.
Yeah,
wow.
It's like playing in the old days. So they just, you know, you need to be strong up the middle, and it's obvious why they're having some struggles. It's because they're not strong up the middle.
Well, let's be honest. They're not strong at second and short. I mean, the catcher's pretty good, and Yang Daikon's superb. So we're talking about those guys in the midfield.
Definitely. In the infield, they're not strong up the middle. But, yeah. So, you know, I understand those concerns, and I see why in terms of them struggling in wins and losses. I mean, they're playing well at times. They're not losing games simply because they're a bad team.
Uh-huh.
And then I love this comment, you know, sometimes we don't hit when we pitch, sometimes we don't pitch when we hit, sometimes we don't do either.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
that's bad. They did fairly well yesterday at Jingu, but yesterday being Saturday. But, you know, I like the fact that he agreed with me and saying that Ohtani should do both. You know, why not?
He agreed with you.
That's been my attitude the whole time.
Oh, has it?
The whole time.
Oh, really? That's been mine as well.
Well, remember we had the question earlier on this year, who's going to have, I don't think it was the most impact. I think it was who's going to.
As a rookie, we asked. You asked me who's going to have the biggest year, the biggest impact as a rookie, and I said Sugano because he's coming out of college.
Right, and I said Ohtani because he's going to play more than once a week.
Okay.
And that was my hope, and
okay.
That was the case. Now I talked to like I said, I talked to Kuroki, the pitching coach, the new first-year pitching coach, who I suppose he gets surrounded every game because people are not, as I learned, the media has been not essentially cut off from talking to Ohtani because everyone was talking to him. Everyone was pulling him in different ways, and they're all asking the same questions. And so they were starting to have post-game briefings with Ohtani, and they limited his media availability in that respect. And I guess he was really nice. Apparently, he was really nice in trying to accommodate all the media requests. And then the team said, "This is just too much. You know, you guys need to do it all after the game." So whether he plays or not, sometimes he'll have a powwow with the media after games. I learned. So anyway, Kuroki was saying that because I had the information I had was that he wasn't going to play in the field a couple of games before he was scheduled to be a starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to clarify all that stuff, and he said, well, at the moment it's one day. The day before he's going to be starting is when he doesn't play in the field, and then the day after is another rest day for him as a pitcher, as a starting pitcher. And I just think there's a lot of, you know, with that going on and, you know, the loss of Itoi as well and Kensuke Tanaka, I just think there's a lot of, I think that team is just, they're struggling to find their footing.
Yeah, it is. It's a real changing so much at one time is really hard. I mean, you know, we don't know what's going on with each toy, what the reason behind that was. Kisunuki's been like, of course, I thought Kisunuki would do well with a good defense behind him, but we really haven't seen him with that team yet.
Yeah. But, you know, my impression was that he would do well pitching in that dome. And but he's pitched well in other places too. He didn't pitch that badly against the Giants the other day for a while.
So yeah. Well, anyway, I think the question about Kuriyama is really interesting because Kuriyama is a real different kind of manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't act first. You know, he's like the other side of Ochiai. He's the nice Ochiai. He doesn't act like other managers, but he's friendly with the media.
Uh-huh.
But he's got these, you know. Reportedly, the issue with him and Yoshi was about how to use Yuki Saito. Okay.
Yeah.
Or how not to use.
Yeah. There you go.
Kuriyama invested a lot in building up Yuki Saito before the season, and he pitched well for six games, and then went in the tank. Okay. And he wanted to bring him back for the Japan series. And, you know, she's like going, what?
Why?
Exactly. I think we got things going good now. And of course, and here's Kuriyama, and he's such a positive, wishful thinking kind of guy. And mm-hmm. he does think outside the box. I mean, who else would give, I guess you've got Yuki Saito, so you want to give him a chance, but who would say, oh, he's going to be our ace pitcher? Nobody. Yeah, exactly.
So not even Yuki Saito's parents think.
Yeah, they would probably say, "Oh, hold off on that." So anyway, he's sort of the king of wishful thinking, but he also thinks outside of the box. So I like the wishful thinking. I'm not keen on, but the idea that he thinks big things are possible, I love. But sometimes, you know, I love the idea that he's trying to give Ohtani a chance to win, you know, jobs in two different places. And because it's really something unusual and different. Is it the smart thing to do? Now that's another question. I don't know. I don't think anybody, I really think nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody does it. So everybody thinks it's a bad idea. I would say 90% of the people think it's a bad idea because nobody does it.
Right. I've been kind of taking a poll as I go along and I've been talking to different players and mm-hmm. I've gotten mostly negative reviews, you know.
Sure.
Basically, he's going to have to pick one or the other. And
right.
The reason is because baseball has become more specialized. And we talked about on the show before that you said you looked it up in the 70s.
Until about 1975.
Yeah, there were a lot of two-way players were more common, and then they just disappeared.
Yeah.
And so it's not that... Yeah, it's not something that no one has ever done in the history of baseball. It's not unprecedented. And it's just that in the world that has become so specialized, Micah said that basically some of the players who are hitters who are doing this full time don't really want to see a guy come around part time and do the things that they're doing.
I can understand that. Who is this guy batting 320 and he doesn't take, you know, he take 3 days off a week to pitch.
I mean, basically his day job is as a position player and his part-time gig is as a pitcher.
Right. So we'll see. But anyway, I love that. And there are certainly our players. I think, of course, there are players who are capable of it, but it's so egregious that that's the interesting part. You know, it's really way out there. And I love the chance that we're getting to see it. Now, I wish it was with a better team. And, here's the story right now on Ohtani. Just the update is that they're looking now at June 18th for the day in which he's going to pitch and bat at the same, in the same game. It's a makeup game, interleague makeup game against the Carp in Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, probably going to be the day when, if Kuriyama thinks he's ready, he was saying that they practiced the other day at Kamagai and Kuriyama was saying that, he looked tired just taking BP. So he wasn't going to push him to pitch when to make him do too much.
Right, right. And, I always, in fact, I talked about it with Brian Wolf. I said, I made the same crack about not being tired as a teenager when I was coming up and working, doing all kinds of, playing basketball and running and all this other stuff. But, I did talk to Brian Wolf about it, and Brian seemed to think that, he's got a lot of potential, and he sees a future for him on the mound.
Mm.
But he said, and I quoted him on this in the story that I wrote, he's going to, if he's going to do it full time, he's going to be a great pitcher.
I think I will agree in that right now he looks like he has more potential as a pitcher.
Yeah.
But, again, this is the – okay, we haven't seen him do anything against left-handed pitchers except go for 0-for-4. Although I didn't see if he batted yesterday against lefties or not. I don't know what that deal was. But, he's hitting, I've said it before, he's hitting the way 18-year-olds aren't supposed to be able to hit professional pitching.
Right. And this is, again, on a part-time sort of basis. He's not playing every day.
Still.
Which makes it more impressive, if you ask me.
Which it is, I don't know whether it's more impressive. The number, the bad side of that is the sample size is small. But, he does get good swings. He has the judgment and adjustment issues that every player moving up a level does. And he's more than moving up. He's moving up several levels.
Right.
From, high school tournament ball to everyday, in his case, frequent, competition against the best players in the country.
Right.
So that in itself is pretty, that he's gotten any hits at all is pretty impressive, because most high school superstar hitters who don't spend their time in high school pitching
mm-hmm.
can't do anything close to what he's doing now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I called him a singles hitter a long time ago, and I think that's what he is now. But of course, he can develop. I mean, he's got the.
18 years old, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He could be, this guy could be, he could be Babe Ruth.
I stood next to him, I saw him, he hustles from the, as you know, watching people take BP. Normally they walk back to the dugout, but he's got to zip through the media frenzy, or potential media frenzy, and so he hustles.
It was just a brief moment.
Yeah, it was a fleeting moment, but I was standing next to him and I said, he's still a little thin, but he's all the size that you want in a power pitching, left-handed swinging guy who you think might have some pop and develop as a hitter. So, he's got the body there. It's how it develops from here. So, and like Micah said, he's a pretty good little hitter.
He is a pretty good little hitter. That's a good expression. He just keeps, he gets out there and he gets fooled. Like I said, the adjustments, he's got a ton of adjustments to make. And despite that, he's still getting a lot of good swings. He's hitting a lot of mistakes, but he's still getting a lot of good swings. Sometimes he looks like he has no idea what's being thrown at him, and he's like going, so that's how they play the game up here. But when he's swinging, he looks good. So that was all. I want to thank Micah for being so forthright and interesting as always.
Yeah, great, great guy. I really like talking to him. I wish we could have talked more.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's stay on the Ohtani subject as we move forward here. And talk about the All-Star fan voting.
Uh-huh.
Now, I understand the desire to want to see a guy who, obviously, we in the media flood the TV waves and the newspapers and the internet and Twitter versus with his doings. Yeah. But throwing him in with the best players in the league as an 18-year-old guy who's barely hitting and barely pitching, I don't get it. I don't know. And this really makes me question the fan voting. And I was really upset the other day when I saw the first, I guess I don't know if it was the first report of the fan voting, because I hadn't really paid attention. I never in my wildest dreams thought he would be anywhere near the ballot anyway. And then up to now, I basically accept the concept that the fans pick popular players. They don't always go with the best players. But normally these guys are popular because they're good, so I don't really worry about it. But this is really not viable. I mean, it makes no sense, and it's unfair for anybody who's having a good season who deserves a spot either on the mound or in the field. But then again, I can see the league really, really endorsing this and not going the other way on it. You know, if I were the commissioner, I'd say, no, he's not playing. But I could see the commissioner now saying, this is great. We can get him in a couple games. We can get him to pitch and hit in the same game. It'll be fantastic. It'll be great. So, but I'm upset about it. I don't think.
Yeah.
This, yeah.
Well, you have a right to be upset, because I think it's you and I and the media who should be picking the All-Star team and deciding who's worthy, and not the fans, you know, who actually pay for the game. I think that those people, the fans, you know, what do they do besides, you know, pour their hearts out for the teams and the players and for Japanese baseball, compared to what we do, which is we talk about it, man. So I think you know where I'm going. Okay. I hear you. When players like Kazushige Nagashima, the son of Shigeo Nagashima, was a rookie and entrenched in the Swallows farm team, but leading the balloting in the All-Star game, you know, you just got to shake your head and go, what are these people thinking? But that being the case, or last year, that basically if you wore a fighter's uniform, you were on the All-Star team.
Right.
Which, oddly enough, I mean, that's how young Daikon got on his first All-Star team, and he turned out to be the MVP. So is it bad that the fans have the vote? Well, obviously, there are better ways to do a – I think what it is, there are better ways to do a fan vote. But – should the fans have the vote? Should the fans be in charge of this thing? Absolutely. Why not? It's their game. I mean, and as far as, is it fair to the players? Well, you know, baseball isn't fair to players. There's a lot of, I could find you five players in the Eastern and Western leagues who should have jobs, who should have everyday jobs in the Central or Pacific League, but don't.
Well, okay.
Because, you know, so it's not fair, and it's how you deal with it and move on with your lives. You know, of course, we would like to see the world be objective as we see it. I mean, I certainly would. I would prefer to see these deserving guys who don't get a lot of mention be in the All-Star game. But, you know, the fans are the fans, and, you know, educate the fans.
Yeah, I'm not saying take the vote away from them. I'm just saying, you know, the commissioner.
Commissioner should take the vote
step in
away
and say, hey, so the commissioner can come in and say, can go to the team and say, hey, Ohtani gets hurt, you know, just before the All-Star game, so he can't play. I don't know what he would do. I don't want them to lie to, deceive the entire public. But
you know, who you remind me of is you're bearing a striking resemblance all of a sudden to Katsuya Nomura.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think in this case it's a bad thing.
Okay.
Although you both got about the same amount of hair.
What?
Okay, he's got more than you do. Okay.
I just cut my hair short. I have a great head of hair. What is your problem?
you just keep it away from public view, like it's a top secret. Okay. Anyway, Nomura, when he was managing the Yakult Swallows, he and Ogi were the managers, so it would have been 1996 All-Star game. Nomura was managing the Central League, and Akira Ogi was managing the Pacific League after the two teams had met in the Japan Series the previous autumn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Hideki Matsui coming up to bat late in the game, Ogi, who was always good for doing interesting things and an outside the box thinker, brought in Ichiro Suzuki from right field to pitch to Hideki Matsui.
Right.
At which point, Katsuya Nomura had a spaz, as we used to say in California, and pinch hit for Matsui and brought in Shingo Takatsu, his closer, to bat, and Takatsu grounded out to shortstop. But it was like, it was a wonderful, wonderful moment. You know, it's great. You know, it's the All-Star games are so, I don't want to say they're silly. You know, there are things in the All-Star game that border on silly, and they can have superb moments. But to me, Ichiro pitching in the All-Star game had a chance to be a great moment.
All right.
It wasn't regular season baseball, and I understand it's not Ted Williams, you know, with hitting a walk-off home run in the All-Star game, or Willie Mays hitting three home runs in the All-Star game or something to that effect. But
Certainly, but and the fact that they're playing three games again this year, it's not an All-Star game. It's an All-Star series. So I understand it, but this thing is supposed to be for the best players. So let's make it for the best players. That's all I'm saying. I don't know what we can do. I don't know that anything can be done. In fact, I just think that the fan voting shouldn't count for maybe 30% of who gets in and who gets doesn't, so that they do have an impact. But yeah, what is the way they do it?
The way they do it is that the fans put in starting pitcher, middle reliever, closer, and then eight position players and a DH in the Pacific League. I don't know why they don't vote for a DH in the Central League. I guess that would be an insult to the players. Because they use one. Right. Anyway, and then the players vote for a pitcher, a starting pitcher, and eight position players and a DH for the Pacific League. And then the players' number one choices who aren't voted by the fans go on to the All-Star team. Then they do the plus one thing like they do in the U.S. where there's an internet ballot to pick somebody who was, left off the
right, and I always thought that would be the guy that Ohtani would be that guy. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that he'd be voted in.
Okay, just for the I didn't check yesterday's results, but until 2 days ago, Ohtani was the third outfielder in the balloting. I think it was Sho Nakata's leading, and then Yoshio Itoi of the Oryx Buffaloes, and then Ohtani, and then Yang Daikon. So it's sort of like a little fighters fan club, as we said. Wear a fighter's uniform, go to the All-Star game.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, I mean, I don't know what can be done, but we can certainly move forward in the podcast. And I just wanted to...
We can. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. I just wanted to talk quickly about the standings now. I always tell people, maybe a couple months before I really start taking the standings seriously. So a couple months have basically passed. In the Central League, the Giants are actually in a tussle here with the Tigers, which we didn't anticipate the Tigers being up there, but
I didn't anticipate the Tigers.
I didn't either. But we knew they could pitch, and if they got any offense at all, they'd be a team that's worthy of competing for a Central League title and maybe a Japan Series title. You never know. But the other teams in the Central League are separated in victories by two. The Yakult Swallows have 22 wins, and the Chunichi Dragons have 24. DeNA and Hiroshima each have 23. So this fight for third place is really going to be interesting, I think, as we go forward here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, those of you who know the Statue of Liberty motto, give me your tired, your poor, your, what is it? Your homeless masses or something? Well, that's the rest of the Central League right there.
Your huddled masses.
Huddled masses. Thank you. Thank you, American History 101 John Gibson Professor. Okay. Yeah, one of those teams could come out, sort of like the 2010 Marines, and, three games left in the season, they have to win all of them to qualify for the final playoff spot to avoid elimination, and they do it. Everybody plays like an all-star and they win the Japan Series, but, that's the playoffs. Weird things can happen.
They're not even tired, poor, and hungry. They're the have-nothings and the have-nots.
Wow.
And I was talking with
Mike. Just when they were feeling good about themselves.
Don't feel good. Somebody's going way down. And I was talking to Michael West Bay, who does the Pro Yaku Report podcast, and he said, we were discussing the fact that, nobody's pulling away from anybody. I said, yes, because they're all stuck in the same puddle of quicksand. And that's just the way it's going to be. So in the Pacific League now, you know, Lotte is still not making a believer out of me in terms of I see this team going to the Pacific League, you know, taking the banner. And the reason I say that is because they have a lot of young players who in the second half of the season are going to be fatigued. A lot of them young pitchers. And they've been getting really great production from them now, but again, this is their first experience doing this, and the games get harder in the second half, and I think teams are going to prepare well against them, and I think they're going to fall off the pace. And I'm really thinking that SoftBank, which is closer now than it has been all season, to the top spot. They're
in third place today.
Yeah, they have 30 wins, but again, 30 wins is the same number of wins as the Eagles and the Lions, and I don't know that those teams are going to be out of it either. So I think SoftBank is going to have to start after this interleague feasting period is over, playing against Pacific League teams and winning those games.
Yeah, because obviously when you're all beating the Central League teams, I mean, the records look great. The Pacific League records all look great. I mean, even the worst place team is pretty good because they get easy pickings against the Central League. So, I don't see any teams. I think, are there any teams in the Pacific League who won't be in the playoffs? I'm inclined to say the Fighters. I just don't see them gelling quickly enough to make it happen. But the Buffaloes certainly, you know, have the ability, and they could. They're a team that's also in a situation like the Fighters. They have new management, some new coaches, a bunch of new players.
Mm-hmm.
They always have that quality. If they can get it sorted out, you know, we've been saying this since the start of the podcast. If they can get it sorted out, they can easily. I think they could easily be in the playoffs. The Lions are. Again, the Lions look very much like the Buffaloes right now. A lot of talent, but not a lot of wins.
Yeah, Mike. Okay. Mike also said, "Yeah, you know, it's time to get going with this thing if we're gonna, you know, if we're gonna make the ship here." And they are 9 games under 500, which is bad, but it's not hideous. And
right.
if they do turn it around, right. And Shohei Nakata has, he's shown that he can. And it looks like the work that he did with Kazuyoshi Tatsunami during the World Baseball Classic is starting to pay off in the regular season. So he looks like a better hitter.
Mm.
And, we'll just have to see if they can pull the pitching staff around and, like Micah said, pitch and hit on the same day more consistently. They can get into it. But, I like the Buffaloes. I just don't like what their pitching staff has done. But considering what their pitching staff has done, they're not in a bad position. They're just one game under 500. So, Lions certainly have played beyond expectations. But again, they have a staff pitching rotation with a lot of young pitchers, and that second half is where you really get tested. So we'll see how they do. You know, the Eagles, they might be overachieving. You know?
I would say they are because of the pitchers, and the bullpen is always. I love Raz, but when he's your closer, he's fooling people, and he's exceptionally good at keeping people off balance. You know, he says he's been keeping his managers and front offices off balance for years, and that's why he's still in Japan.
<Ba-dum-bum>.
I'll tell you this, if he gets the job done, yeah, way to go, dude. I hope it can happen because I like a lot of the young players on the Eagles. I see them as being young and some of them as being young and athletic as opposed to being, overall power, talents. But, they could be the 2010 Marines as well.
Yep, there's potential. All right, it'll be great to see how it goes. Now, I wanted to congratulate you for getting all the top performers of May correct, all four.
Yeah.
Nice job.
I get the Prognosticator of the Month award. Do I have to see a skin doctor for that?
I would suggest some kind of medical care, but I don't know. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. The first is from Anthony in Melbourne, and he left us a comment on the Facebook page, and he said, "Here's something I have always been curious about. Who are the biggest hyped-up draft picks who ended up in disappointment, most notable to you? I know players like Daisuke Araki or Koji Ota never had great careers as pros, yet the latter still gets endorsements to this day purely because he is a Koshien hero. Yuki Saito has time to do something, at least.
I think he's got a lot of time to do endorsement deals.
Handkerchiefs?
That's nice. I love it. You may remember me. I used to use a handkerchief. Now you can too.
your most hyped. Your biggest. They call it hazure. Your bust.
Hazure for the super rookie. Would be, I'd go back to two guys, Kazushige Nagashima, who was voted onto the All-Star team when he was on the farm team. We've had a few of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a, not only was he a, now I don't know if he was a bad player, but he never did anything with what he could do.
He never did anything with what he could do.
With the talents he had, he didn't really move forward with them very much. And here's a guy who got more chances than, I don't know what, he had more chances than Lazarus. He was buried on the farm team, and he had thousands of farm team at bats in which he proved he was a substandard hitter. But the Giants, under his father, kept deciding to give him job opportunities and figuring, well, maybe now he's figured out how to play third base at the top level. So it turned, you know, he's a better actor than he was a third baseman.
Definitely.
So he's one. I think the other guy who sticks in my mind is a guy named Osamu Shimano. Now, a lot of you know this person. If you don't know his name, he's an American Express card ad waiting to be. He was a high school pitcher, and in 1968, the Yomiuri Giants wanted to draft slugging university catcher Koichi Tobuchi. But that year the draft was done in order. Wow, what a interesting concept. And Hanshin picked Tobuchi first. So when the Giants were then talking about, and everybody thought the Giants were then going to pick the best university pitcher, Senichi Hoshino, who really wanted to play for the Giants. Instead, manager Tetsuharu Kawakami at the time said, no, we got plenty of pitching on the first team. We need somebody who's got the outstanding potential.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went with a high school pitcher, and the guy pitched 24 career games, went 1-4. And Hoshino, who was so miffed at the Giants, spent his entire career as a player and a manager tormenting them.
Yes, yeah.
So, and what happened to Osamu was, Shimano, was that he became famous as the Hankyu Braves and Oryx Blue Wave mascot. So I think Hoshino has a grudge that the Giants picked Nepi before they picked him.
Nepi. For me, I just want to throw a couple of names out there. I don't really have, I just have a couple stories, but, one of the names is Nagisa Arakaki. Who was kind of hyped, but I think the biggest.
Oh, he was good though.
He was good for a while. He hasn't
like got hurt, but he was good. I mean, it wasn't a bust like.
He wasn't a complete bust. Okay, all right.
He started yesterday.
And Takahiko Nomaguchi, who's with the Giants, who was supposed to be good and not good. But the story that is most fresh in my mind is the story of the left-handed pitcher Takanobu Tsujiura, who the Giants picked in 2005. Mm-hmm. And he had this really great fastball and was supposed to be fantastic, and we haven't seen him yet. He's still on the roster.
Oh.
He's still on the roster, but we haven't seen him yet throw one pitch on the top team. And another story I remember is the story of Naomichi Donoue, whom the Dragons picked along with a couple of other teams, including the Giants, who tried to draft him.
Right.
The Dragons won the lottery, and the Giants,
yep,
they ended up picking Hayato Sakamoto.
Yeah, that was sure a wasted draft choice.
Yeah. So that worked.
Where's that guy now?
Yeah, that worked out well for the Giants because he's played a lot more games and had a lot more production than Mr. Donovan. Let's move on. We got to keep going because we got one more question. This is from Steve in London, and he says he's a big fan of the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast.
Thank you, Steve.
Not really a baseball question, but I've been really interested to hear about how both of you guys learned Japanese and got to what I presume is a fluent level.
Well, that's a heck of a presumption, but I studied Japanese in university, and I'll give a shout out to my much maligned university professor, Chiyoko Ishibashi, who got me to go to Japan when I was thinking about graduate school in international relations. And she said, international relations, what is that? You want to do that? That's not what you want to do. Do what you want to do. So following her brilliant advice, doing what I want to do, I came to Japan and learning Japanese sort of came with it. So I studied and worked hard in kind of an old fashioned, nose to the grindstone, studied repetition, notebooks, textbooks, that whole bit. And then there was John, who had a different experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, 23 years ago when I moved to Japan and arrived in Nagoya, it was a much different world there. You really had no choice but to learn a little bit of Japanese to survive.
Mm.
And so I bought a grammar book, and when I started running, I had nothing, because if you remember back in the old days when you tried to run with a CD player, it would skip. And even though I paid a lot of money for a non-skipping CD player, it skipped anyway when I ran. So I decided,
John skipping through the streets of Nagoya.
So I decided to use a AM radio. I was an FM radio, but all it would pick up was AM stations. Okay. So I started listening to the radio as I ran. And I noticed if I listened to talk shows, that they would go through the topic of the day, which one day it might be skiing, one day it might be swimming, but each time I'd have to go home and look up in the dictionary some word that they kept repeating the whole time I was running, but that I didn't know. And I watched TV. I listened to baseball games on the radio. And I bought a grammar book and had my nose in the grammar book on the subway trains. And I would go out and go shopping and talk to the clerks at stores, because that would be a way to practice, basic conversation stuff. I listened to people when I was on the subway. I listened to everything. And I picked up a newspaper at one point and started trying to read some of it. And because baseball is a repetitive sport where ERA hits, other stats, other numbers, situations in games like two on, one out, they all repeat every day.
Mm-hmm.
I got used to the kanji and was able to work my way around reading some of the newspapers once I found out what these kanji meant. And then when I started this job, my reading skills were still lacking, but they improved immensely because I had to translate a lot of stuff. And a lot of times I would go to some of my colleagues and say, I don't know how to read this, and they would read it for me. And then I would understand what it was, but I just couldn't read it. I would understand. I'd know all the words. And so, again, it's repetitive. So, I learned how to read a lot taking this job. So I've gotten a lot better, since 2005.
Well, if repetition has helped you, I must have been a real boon. I seem to be repeating myself a lot.
All right. So, but I can tell you this, there are levels of fluency, and, as a colleague of mine reminded me or helped me remember the other day by bringing me something I could barely read and asking me, what does this say? I am not fluent. I have reached a level of fluency. But thanks a lot, V, for helping me out and making me realize I have a lot more things, a lot more to study.
Yeah, and thank you for the question, Steve, and thank you for the question, Anthony. And we'd like to hear you speak. Don't limit your voices to the printed word.
That's right. MP3s are always accepted, and we love to play them on the show. I love them. I dig them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, John.
Thank you. And remember to send your email or leave us a Facebook note. And send the email to yakyugahn@gmail.com, and we'll address it on the show. And I'm traveling to the States next week, but we're still doing a show.
We are indeed.
So we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Enjoy your baseball.